Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, on two recent occasions, as you've just been hearing on the news there, people have sustained injuries on flights due to severe turbulence. The second, as you also know, was a flight into Dublin at the weekend. So was that a coincidence, or are we going to see more of it? Or are there particular sorts of turbulence that we can't do much about? Kevin Byrne is a retired Air Corps lieutenant and an airport safety and security auditor. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hello, Sean. Let me just start with an apology. I am in Belfast on a bit of duty. I've gone green, got the train up here today, but I picked the quietest street I could, and now it's filled with noisy buses. And it's a holiday, which I'd forgotten about. So if there's noise in the background, it's true, genuine sound effects from Belfast. So
okay. All right. That's just a nice bit of atmosphere for us. We'll take it as being that. Now, on both these instances, Kevin, this was a particular sort of turbulence thing.
Yes. I first heard of the one about Singapore, which was the more serious one because somebody died. I was in Western Airport with a meeting with fellow aviators, and we couldn't believe it because it was so severe and so sudden. And that was a Boeing 777. I've flown on it frequently enough. They're big, heavy aircraft, weigh up to 200 metric tons, not easily disturbed from cruising flights, which is what they were at. But the one that happened in Dublin, into Dublin, was a Boeing 787, a Dreamliner, made by Boeing, also a heavy aircraft, maybe 150 metric tons. So these are not light aircraft, and there's no way of knowing, unfortunately, because just to make it in context, as it were, all aircraft have radars in the nose, and the pilots look out for things like storm clouds, cumulonimbus clouds, stuff they would not normally fly through. They avoid them by asking for deviations from the course from air traffic control, and they get it. But in clear air turbulence, we can't see it's coming. There's no warning given, and the pilots can't say to the cabin crew, stop serving the food, stop serving the booze, and get everybody returned to the seats and strap in, which is what happened on the flight I took recently from Budapest to Birmingham, for example. You know, 10 minutes of disruption and back to business after that. This is of a different scale entirely, Sean.
And it's clear air turbulence, I think is what it's called, and it's completely undetectable, or at least at the moment we can't detect it.
Yes, and there's a problem there, of course, because really, if you can think of the air being like a turbulent river, there are pockets of it, you know, or areas of it which have got huge updrafts and downdrafts. Now, in the storm case, you can see them in clouds, you stay clear from them. But if it's clear air turbulence, you simply no way of knowing what's out there, no detection system at present, and there's no way the satellites that are flown in space by the Met agencies can look at it and tell you where it is, and it can be over oceans. It's more prevalent down towards the tropics around the equator and places like that, sometimes over oceans, sometimes over mountain ranges, but it's a very dangerous thing. A study in Reading University recently put a paper out saying it's going to happen more frequently because of global warming, and that's a worrying factor for aviators.
Oh my God, it is, yeah. And to give some sense of what that's like, this is more, I assume, than just the plane shaking a bit, because, you know, I often think normal turbulence is like the plane's going over speed bumps or something. Does this actually feel like it's falling out of the sky?
It does, in fact. You're flying along. It's hard to predict. It's hard to also describe it. You're flying along at a cruising altitude, maybe 35, maybe 37,000 feet. The autopilot is on. Everything is stable. And suddenly the aircraft is literally pushed down like a giant hand squeezing it down. And if you're not tied down, you enter a thing called, you know, negative G, or weightlessness, if you call it like that. And everything that's not tied down will float, as you might have seen in the pictures, including the very heavy trolleys which take the food and drink down the middle of the aircraft. That can hit the ceiling literally and cause serious damage. The people who were not tied down, as was the case with some crew members, unfortunately, they literally bounce off the cabin and they can hit the overhead lockers and such like. And some of them were injured in both flights and both cases, which is a bit of a shock. You know, I was disturbed just to hear that the pilot hadn't come back to the passengers to give them some consolation or some words of comfort. 20 minutes is a long time, but they're fighting to get the aircraft back under control, because if the autopilot drops out, you have to revert to manual flying. And that's probably what happened in the case of the Qatar Airlines. I'm just guessing that.
Okay. But generally speaking, because presuming that the plane is cruising and it's on autopilot, is that kind of automatically clicked off then when an event like this takes place?
Yes, depending on how much the upset is. You can do it manually, but sometimes if an upset like that happens, if it falls, the autopilot says, I'm not sure what's going on here. It just clicks out, you know, because some of the control movements can take it, knock it out. It doesn't take much to knock it out. So it's knocked out, and the pilots then have to fly and see what's happening. It's a shock to them because they weren't expecting it in both cases, I think. And they have to reestablish stabilized flying controls, and then they have to do an estimate and see what damage, if any, has been done to the airframe or the engines or other parts. And then they have to go back and talk to the crew chief in the back, the cabin crew person in charge, and ask, what do we have in terms of injuries? You know, and that's what happened in the case of Singapore, where they diverted to, I think it was Thailand, and landed at Bangkok. In the case of flying over Turkey heading for Dublin, they made an estimate of the situation, discussed it with the crews, and said, look, we can go on to Dublin. The injuries are minor enough. And that's what happened in the case most recently.
Right. Yeah. But presumably, even the best trained pilots, it's a bit of a shock. And there's maybe a matter of seconds or even minutes where they kind of, they're kind of going before they can react to this.
Indeed, because you have to scan the instruments, and if the autopilot clicks out, there's a warning telling you that. You have to see, for example, have you been in a mid-air collision? Have you collided with something else? Has a piece fallen off the aircraft? Is there a bang? You know, there are all these things that have to go through. And because it's not an obvious emergency, you have to go through certain things and check what has gone wrong. What is the problem here? Is it a fire on board? That kind of thing, you see. It's a startle. The pilots are startled for a short while, but very quickly their training comes in and they'll say, let's get the aircraft flying stable again. And, you know, check for the damages and so forth, and decide then, do we need, in this case, to divert, as was the case in the Singapore Airlines, or can we continue with where we are, because there's no obvious damage to the aircraft. Don't forget, aircraft are very, very strong. They're designed for that kind of thing, believe it or not, and they've been tested to destruction on the ground. So there's a lot of safety features there. People are worried and concerned, of course, for future flying, but huge amounts of study have gone in to try and predict where these things might happen. And there's agreements now between the World Meteorological Situation Association, I should say, and the International Air Transport Association, which is the UN body for flying. They're attempting to put, you know, computer models together and see where is this likely to happen, because if, as predicted, it's going to happen more frequently, it will affect long-range aircraft, and particularly those flying over the oceans. And we need to remove as much danger as we can from aviation, because, as you know, Sean, it's a remarkably safe thing to do.
After an event like that, though, I mean, and as you pointed out there, a bit disappointing that the pilot didn't talk to the passengers a bit earlier. But I assume a pilot can't say, we've had some clear air turbulence, we won't be having any more. But do those things tend to cluster together? Is there any evidence on that?
It's hard to know is the honest answer. Some of these things can last for many, many square kilometres. You could be hitting a patch of it and have more than one event, because where there's a downdraft, there's often an updraft. You could have the aircraft flown higher into the sky again. In most cases, they fall. They literally feel as if they're falling. The lift has been taken away for a short while. The aircraft hasn't stalled now because it's still flying at a high speed. It's just caught in a blast of air, a huge blast of air over many square kilometres, which is forcing it down to a lower altitude for a short while until it establishes itself. It's a bit like hitting a bump and taking off, you know, getting airborne on your car when you weren't expecting it, and it stabilises again. But it is possible that you could reach it again. The area of clear air turbulence can be very short, very small, or it can extend for many, many, you know, hundreds of kilometres, square kilometres. And that's the kind of research we have to do. How big are these cells going to be? Where will they likely occur again? What time of the day? Is it by day and by night? Mostly they happen by day, but nobody knows that they might happen at night again. So there's still a lot of research to be done.
Kevin, thanks a million for speaking with us today, as ever. That was Kevin Byrne there, retired Air Corps lieutenant. A few comments on that. The priority for pilots is to aviate, navigate, communicate in that order. Communication can take a while, even with air traffic control, when things go wrong. Another person says, on the same subject, in relation to the pilots not speaking to the passenger straight away, I'd imagine he'd be busy enough getting permission to divert and set up the routes for that. Then I'd imagine he'd be speaking with the cabin crew and getting all the details about what happened to crew and passengers. That can take a lot of time. So 20 minutes isn't terrible. I think those passengers should be a little bit more understanding and compassionate that the crew had been affected too. Well, indeed, I mean, apparently by all reports, they could see that with their own eyes, what was going on, because the crew got injured as well. I suppose, though, in that situation, everybody, you know, the people who feel more powerless in all this are the passengers. So maybe there's something of a necessity to get them as calm as possible, as quickly as possible. Somebody else says, a recent report from Indian Aircraft, which has experienced such bad turbulence, that the captain came over the intercom and asked people to pray. I kid you. Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but that's probably not what you should do.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.